Welcome to the Head Ballet Podcast. This is the place to come to hear my guests discuss with me, Paul Abbott, their favourite novelty songs, the funny, the weird, the daft, and the outright baffling tunes that have been skipping and dancing around in their heads for years. Everybody loves something that could be considered novel, so why not celebrate it? In this episode, I'm joined by music and snooker fan, Denise Corsell, who is taking us back to the 80s, to a smoky room in a club in Arcade Place, Romford, where plans are afoot to take the pop world by storm. You can find Denise on Twitter at Denise Corsell. That's spelt C-O-U-R-C-O-U-X. As always, if you're enjoying this podcast, I'd love your help to get the word out. If you can share the episodes on social media or pop onto your podcast provider and give it a preferably 5-star rating or a review, then I'd be much obliged. And don't forget, you can get hold of us anywhere by using the username HeadBalletPod. Now, for those of you who are listening in black and white, this podcast is the one next to the green. So Denise, when we were discussing which song you were going to bring onto the podcast, you described two particular passions that you have. One was the band Queen, and the other was the game of snooker. So if we just put aside Brian May's Starfleet project for the moment, and before you tell everyone what you've actually picked, can you tell me a bit about how that particular sport became an obsession for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess Queen and snooker both came into my life. I'm not really sure how, as a teenager. about 15, 16, I got really, really into them. I guess while a lot of my peers were probably testing their boundaries in other ways, I got quite obsessive about, I just started watching it on the TV. It's not something that like my dad got me into or anything like that. I just really enjoyed watching it, got quite into it. It was around the time when, you know, Stephen Hendry was still playing at the top of his game, Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Oh, well, he might be back. He might be back again
coming out of retirement, absolutely. And, you know, actually, a lot of the guys are still around now, Ronnie O'Sullivan, John Higgins, all of those guys. So, I sort of got really into watching it and finding out about it. And, yeah, sort of 20 years later, I'm still watching.
That's excellent. I mean, it's an interesting sport. It's not quite like, say, cricket, which is stats driven and people get obsessed with information about cricket, for example. It's more, it's definitely more personality driven snooker, I think. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got no interest in sport apart from snooker. I'm like the least sporty person you could hope to meet. It's very much about the characters, the kind of look of it. It's, you know, there's sort of little tropes that you pick up on, like the commentators say the same things over and over again. It's quite a sort of comforting thing to watch, really. But it's definitely built on its characters, and that's a big part of it.
Yes, definitely. And I'm sure we will get stuck into a few of them as we go along with this. So I suppose you better reveal to everyone the song that you've chosen for us to listen to today as your pick for the Head Ballet.
Okay, well, I'd be surprised if you've not guessed it by now, but it's Snooker Loopy by Chas and Dave and the Matchroom Mob.
Snooker Loopy, that's all we, me and him and them and me. We'll show you what we can do with a load of balls and a snooker cue. Pop the wrist in, screw bang for the yellow, green, brown, blue, pink and black. Snooker Loopy, that's all we.
So this is something that charted in 1986, which seems to have been a good year for mad songs. Anyway, and it's got to number 6, so this is a top 10 single that came out. It's got quite the legacy. I think everyone really does know this song, whether they're interested in snooker or not, because it is quite a significant and odd little thing to have got into the top 10 in the mid-80s anyway. And I suppose we'll just hold off on coming back to too much discussion about that for a second while we just discuss something that came out a couple of years before.
Yeah.
Just that perhaps helps us to chart the rise of snooker as a popular thing, and that is the BBC Snooker Themes EP, which I think you said you helped yourself to a copy of off eBay.
I did, yes. It was one of my lockdown treats. Yes, I managed to get hold of a nice copy of that.
Excellent. So it's in good nick on vinyl, is it?
Yeah, yeah. Been giving it a spin.
Oh, brilliant. Excellent stuff. So let's run down what's on that BBC Snooker Themes EP, because that comes out on BBC Records and Tapes. RESL 144 for anyone who's ticking off them. Yeah, it's four tracks and opens with probably the most famous bit of snooker related stuff, which is the song, well, it's not a song, is it? It's a piece of music called Drag Racer by the Douglas Wood Group.
That's right, yeah. So that's the theme that's still used to this day for BBC's snooker coverage.
Yeah. And then the other tracks on the EP are perhaps less well known now anyway, because I think they may have been sort of used for brief periods of time anyway. Certainly the second track on that first side, which is Shot of the Championship, it's listed as on the record, I believe, but it's actually the music to a show called Scorpion by the Limelight Orchestra.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd never heard of this show before. It was a 1983 BBC series about an assassin in Scotland. But yeah, it's a really great piece of music. I really like it. It's very atmospheric, and you know, you can see on YouTube there's sort of archive clips of David Vine running through the shots of the championship, which they still do now. They choose sort of, you know, eight to ten shots for viewers to vote on their favourites. But that was a sort of very atmospheric sort of soundtrack to that little segment of the snooker.
Yeah, they don't have music now that sounds like the music for basically a Cold War thriller, which is what that sounds like.
I know, it made snooker very cool.
So here we go. Watch closely. Shot of the Championship, 1987. No snooker championship would be complete without Ted Lowe locked away in his commentary box overlooking the table.
Yeah, very enigmatic indeed. But once you've finished with that, you can flip the disc over and you get a little slice of everyone's favourite instrumentalist, Vangelis.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, like, super cool, really atmospheric, electronic, instrumental. So To the Unknown Man, his piece was used for the Frame of the Day segment, which they don't do anymore. But again, yeah, really sort of cool soundtrack used by the BBC there in the 80s.
And he shares the second side of this disc. I suppose if there's ever two more contrasting characters, it's Vangelis and Winifred Atwell.
Yes.
And the Winifred Atwell one might be fairly well known because it's the black and white rag used for Pot Black.
That's right, yeah. So Pot Black was still on screen and was sort of really central to the rise of snooker on the BBC as a mainstream sport. And yeah, this sort of ragtime piano tune by Winifred Atwell was the soundtrack to it.
Oh, if only Winifred and Vangelis could have actually got together and done something, that would have been fantastic.
God, I'd love to hear that collaboration.
Wouldn't you just? It would be like nothing else on earth, I'm sure.
But yeah, it's a joy to watch her performing it, you know, on YouTube and stuff. She's such a great performer, you know, really sort of engaging with the audience. You know, she's a real sort of crowd pleaser, so it's a very entertaining watch.
Yeah, so the Snooker Themes EP comes out in 1984, and it actually does get in the charts, only up to the number 90, I believe.
Okay.
Which is probably a good showing for a BBC record, because I don't think they were really aiming to, you know, to chart with them. They were just making these things available for the handful of people who have become obsessed with TV themes. So that comes out. But it, like I say, it perhaps presages what is the rise of snooker as massively popular, and which is perhaps best represented by Snooker Loopy, like you said.
Yeah, well, I guess in between the CP being released and Snooker Loopy, we had the 1985 World Championship final, the Black Ball final between Dennis Taylor and Steve Davis, which, yeah. You know, is the iconic moment of snooker, which is, you know, still fabled to this day. So that really sort of took it into the stratosphere as a sport and was probably the catalyst behind Snooker Loopy coming out to capitalise on that next year.
And, I mean, who better to do the music than Chaz and Dave, really? And you could question why Chaz and Dave were picked to do this, but I think when you look at the origins of where snooker's emerged from in terms of geography, it's basically come out of a building in Romford owned by Barry Hearn, who I'm sure we'll come back to as well at some point.
Yeah.
And of course, Chaz and Dave, as you know, the ultimate in Cockney knees up rock and rollers, as I suppose is what Tower described them. Does that seem fair enough as a description of Chaz and Dave?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think that sums it up neatly.
Full of Cockney rhyming slang. I mean, there's a bit in this record, but we'll come to another record full of rhyming slang in a little bit. But yeah, it's amazing. It gets to number 6. It's on the charts somewhere in the top 100 for at least 11 weeks. So it was very popular.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still, I mean, you know, I was a toddler when this came out. It's still synonymous with the sport to this day. You know, it, as you say, it was a top 10 hit, and it is, you know, that it's enduring. It's very much, you know, especially at that time, a sort of male-centric sport. So, and you know, there was a lot of London blokes playing snooker at the time, so absolutely the marriage of the matchroom mob, this crew of their snooker players, with Chaz and Dave was just a sort of no-brainer, really.
So you better run down who makes up the matchroom mob then.
Yeah, so we've got Tony Mio, who is the one I'm sort of least familiar with. He retired in 97, so just before I started watching it. Dennis Taylor, who's still commentating for the BBC now, sort of mm-hmm. very well-known character with his big glasses. Got Terry Griffiths, the Welsh player, known for his very, very slow style of snooker. Willie Thorne, recently departed. Sadly. Just as an aside, he had Snooker Loopy played at his funeral, apparently. It was the last song that he went out to. But yeah, another sort of BBC commentator there. Steve Davis, who was at the peak of his powers in the mid-80s. So yeah, that's the matchroom mob. And Barry Hearn, as you say, who headed up matchroom sport and managed this crew of snooker players, he makes an appearance in the record as well.
So he plays the manager in the record, doesn't
he? Yeah.
So in that final verse. Yeah, Barry Hearn's an interesting character as someone who's totally shaped the way British sports sort of grew in the 70s and 80s particularly. For me, it's where it stands out is because I'm a big darts fan.
Okay.
And he's sort of in charge of that split in darts that happens in the early 90s where the BDO and the PDC split off, and he's turned darts in the professional darts company, corporation, whatever it is, into this huge stadium-filling, personality-driven thing, whilst the BDO grassroots darts is, you know, still losing viewers, losing opportunities to be on television. So I can only bear him certain ill will because I do love the BDO darts, but he has made, you know, these seemingly working class sports very important and brought them to a lot of people. And yeah, this is a prime example.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely got an eye on the sort of mass entertainment value of these sports. It's quite impressive really how snooker was really sort of in the doldrums for a long time, but he sort of took it, you know, global, really.
Yeah, he certainly did. So I mean, I've got to ask this question, and This concept behind this show is never to sneer at any of the things we're talking about, but I do have to ask this question, is do you actually like Snooker Loopy as a song?
I mean, I'm fond of it. I mean, I'm fond of a lot of novelty records because, you know, they mean something to me. You know, I've got memories of, you know, holidays, childhood holidays and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm fond of it. Never sort of listen to it, you know, for sort of musical listening pleasure. I guess fondness is probably the word for it. It's
That's fine. I'll let you have that one. I think you've made the case clear, and I think that's how a lot of people feel about a lot of these sorts of songs anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking at the point I've had it in my head for several days now. It is probably one of the catchiest songs ever. It's sort of relentless. So
yeah. So yeah, it doesn't particularly do much other than it has a chorus and a verse and 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 lots more choruses. It never goes off in any particular crazy instrumental tangents or anything like that.
No, and there's not a huge amount to sort of differentiate between the chorus and the verse. It just sort of unwinds on and on sort of thing with the same sort of rhythm behind it the whole way through.
Yeah, so the chorus will be obviously very famous, and it does the very quick job of explaining the order of the colours that you have to pot on the table, which is quite good, quite handy if you don't know.
Yeah, a little instructional piece there to open it with.
And then it gets into a verse by verse about these characters who make up the Matchroom Mob, and we open with the one about Tony Meo.
Yes.
Who's, I mean, I don't want to say that it's, I don't know, it's not racist, because that doesn't make sense, but it's certainly picking on his heritage as what it's picked on for is the way they talk about him. And if you look at how people have transcribed it, it makes it even more like they're making fun of his Italian roots that he's got somewhere back in his history.
Yeah.
What's the character trait they've picked up for him?
Well, as I say, Snooker's very sort of character-led, and that, you know, what we've got here is really a bunch of caricatures of the characters. So, you know, he's got his Italian or Italian, as they say it, roots, that he's, you know, very smart and he's, you know, looking dapper in his suits. I mean, as I say, Tony Meo is not a character that I sort of know from my time watching Snooker, so you don't really get loads about him here apart from that he's got Italian heritage.
Yeah.
I'm kind of bemused by the last line of his
verse. So I was gonna...
I have no idea what it means. I've tried to find out for him. I don't know if it's a very 80s specific bit of slang that I've not come across.
Yeah, I was having a little look at this, and the internet seems divided on it, because I think the implication here is that Tony Meo, whether he won or lost, was always quite emotional.
Yeah.
And would perhaps start crying. And the way that Chaz and Dave have chosen to express this, and it, obviously it's Tony Meo sing, so the last line of every verse is sung by the snooker player they're referring
yes.
to. So he gets to sing the line, as I've read it transcribed and as I think it sounds, "I always bite me eyeballs."
Yes.
And whether he wins or whether he does, I always bite me eyeballs.
Now that's what I hear it as, and having watched him perform that line, I think it's "I always bite me eyeballs," but you're right, some people say it's "pipe me eyeballs."
Well, that makes even less sense.
Yeah.
Somehow that makes less sense than "bite my eyeball."
Or "wipe," which maybe makes a little bit more sense, but yeah, I'm pretty sure he's saying "bite." So maybe it's due to, like, the expressions he made or something, you know, maybe did a bit of a gurn or something. But, yes.
No, I think that might end up as a mystery for the ages, that one, anyway. And then we move on to good old Dennis Taylor, and funnily enough, it's the glasses that feature.
Yes, the big old snooker player's glasses that he's synonymous with. Yeah. So, I mean, Dennis Taylor was, just won the World Championships the previous year, so he was very, very popular player at that time. He was very much the underdog who'd won in 1985. But yeah, it's his glasses that are the focus of the verse. Because I wear these goggles, as he says at the end of it, that's why he pots all the balls.
Why the old my boggles, and nowadays he pots a lot, because I wear these goggles.
Good old boggles, goggles rhyme. That's one of the lesser spotted rhymes that you get in pop songs, that, I think.
Yeah, it's when you can just feel the setup coming on where it says boggles. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Right, then we've got the Welsh snooker player, Terry Griffiths, in the next verse.
Yes, we do. We're back to the stereotypes again. We've got Terry the Taff, who was born in the valleys of the Land of Song.
Yeah.
So, and it's kind of peculiar because his, the lead up to the conclusion of his verse really seems to be just a setup to take the Mickey out of Willie Thorne in the next one. It says, "If I win, I'll celebrate. I'll buy another 8 hairbrushes for me Barnet," which is pretty laboured rhyme in there.
"If I win," he says, "with a grin, it can only help me Barnet. I'll celebrate, I'll buy another 8 hairbrushes for me Barnet."
It's also, they rhyme Barnet, which is obviously Cockney rhyming slang, Barnet, fair for hair. But they rhyme it with the words can't it, as I would say it, or carnet. Carnet and Barnet.
I know, wonderful.
I'm having to try and channel my Essex side and my family there to try and get that across. But yeah, I hadn't actually twigged there because, as you say, they talk about him being Welsh in the top part of the verse, but actually they don't seem to make much... So why are they talking about hairbrushes?
I know.
But like you say, I've not actually twigged that it links into this very next verse and our dear departed friend Willie Thorne, whose most famous feature was...
His bald head. Yeah, which, you know, he obviously took in pretty good humour in this song. You know, they talk about when he gets down to a shot, he blinds everyone when the light shines on it. So I don't think Terry Griffiths was particularly known for his head of hair, so I'm pretty sure it was just a setup to go on to Willie Thorne's lack of hair in the next one.
I always get the feeling with Willie Thorne, and I think it's perhaps reflected in some of the obituaries and messages that came out after he passed away, which was only a couple of months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's that he was very well thought of and of good humour in general. So it seems like perhaps Snooker Loopy is more appropriately attached to him than any of these players, really. It seems like a good anthem for someone who was a good player, but never, as I understand it, was never absolutely rolling in trophies, was he?
No, I think he only had... I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he only had one ranking title to his names. But, you know, he was kind of a journeyman snooker player in his day, I think. They called him Mr. Maximum because he made a few maximum breaks, but he didn't sort of reach the heights of your Steve Davises and stuff. But, you know, he was a one of these characters who people liked to watch. He was entertaining, sort of had a, you know, legacy long after he played as a commentator, much loved by the viewers. So obviously had a bit of self-deprecating sense of humour to be able to,
to deal with all
deal
this,
with the
yeah.
sort of, you know, sort of ribbing about his appearance.
It's just not fair giving off that glare.
Perhaps I ought to chalk it.
Snooker Loopy, that's our way.
Yeah, and then we come to the final verse, which is Steve Davis as the featured character.
Yeah. So we've got Steve Davis, who, you know, they make a mention of the fact that, you know, the previous year he lost out in the Black Ball final to Dennis Taylor in the World Championship. He never got to put the snooker crown on his ginger nut because the black ball wouldn't go down. He was, of course, you know, in the 80s, spitting image, had a puppet of him and stuff, you know, Steve Interesting Davis. He was caricatured as quite a boring player, but they don't really touch on that in Snooker Loopy.
His manager and all said, that ball better down to make his mind up. Now he don't care who wins this year
because he's got the rest of us signed up.
No, I mean, Steve Davis is the, if I think of snooker, he's the first thing that comes into my mind, because when I was watching this in the 80s, which would have been sat with my grandma in her house when we were visiting, because she was always watching the snooker, Steve Davis was the big new name when that was happening. And he's still around now, and I think he's a very good commentator as well, so it's nice to see him when he pops up.
But he's got
this legacy now as someone who's really into music, as a DJ and all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely, he's like he's a serious DJ and sort of a serious music fan as well, you know, techno and progressive rock. He's like a serious music nerd, so I'm not sure how he feels about you know, his appearance on Snooker Loopy, but he's as you say, he's a great commentator. He's actually a really funny guy. He doesn't sort of deserve a sort of interesting, in inverted commas, persona that's attached to him.
Yeah, I did see one article where Steve Davis described Snooker Loopy as being an albatross around his neck, because obviously it's something that people people have talked to him more probably about that than they have about his own DJ career. But he did also in that same article say, I did listen to it recently, it's quite catchy.
Aww.
And he's not wrong.
Oh, well, that's nice. He's reconciled himself with it.
Yeah, you've got to move on with these things, it'd drive you mad. So, yeah, I suspect the B-side of Snooker Loopy didn't get much play, and that was a song called Wallop Bracket Snookered, which, as far as I can tell, doesn't actually have anything to do with snooker whatsoever.
Yeah, agreed. I'm not sure where the snooker comes in. I think it's sort of shoehorning a reference in. But yeah, it's a song about things that go wallop. That's it in a nutshell. So yeah, boxing, horse racing, horse goes down, it goes wallop. Yeah. Someone falling out of a rocket ship goes wallop.
All those common things that you refer to.
Exactly,
when you think about
spot the anomaly there.
The shooter keeps sodding about with my back lights. He started to wallop, let go of me collar. He gives me a smack, I hit him back, wallop. He's gone down.
Wallop, he's gone down.
I imagine that B-side did not get played very often if you bought this for Snooker Loopy anyway. They've definitely just stuck the word snookered after it as a subtitle just to make it seem like it should be there, like you say, and it's just...
I think so.
So we've had... Yeah, we've had this personality-driven thing, Snooker Loopy, and, like we say, big success, obviously popular. But something you alerted me to before we get to the sequel to Snooker Loopy is a thing called, The Wanderer, very famous song anyway, by a group of snooker players called Four Away.
Yeah, absolutely. So, this is not so well-known. You might be able to tell me whether it charted or not. I couldn't find any details about any sort of spectacular chart performance of it, but this was a single that came out also in 1986, around the same time as Snooker Loopy, in the run-up to the World Championships, and it had a sort of rival group of snooker players. So we've got Alex Hurricane Higgins, Jimmy Whirlwind White, Tony Knowles and Kirk Stevens. So you've got really sort of the bad boys of snooker there, putting out a rival record. But interestingly, I've seen a short interview with Alex Higgins talking about it, and he sort of says that he had the idea, and he had no idea that Snooker Loopy was going to be a thing. So, I mean, whether that's true or not, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's so interesting that you had the sort of jolly matchroom mob and then your sort of real sort of bad boys of snooker.
Yeah.
Doing a sort of a single at the same time.
Yeah, so that comes out on President Records, PT545, collected information there. You're asking me, did it chart? It did not chart.
No.
I could find no evidence that it got even a sniff of the charts, to be honest. And I think it probably was dead in the water after Snooker Loopy came out anyway.
Yeah. The EPs in front of me. Just a peculiar thing about Four Away is that it's only got three of them on the front cover of it. They're sort of Kirk Stevens. I don't know if he just sort of sacked off the whole thing by the time they did the photo shoot for the front cover. But yeah, there's only the three of them on the cover of there, which is makes it kind of a little bit sadder as well that they couldn't get the four of them together for the cover. They're wielding their snooker cues like guitars on a beach somewhere.
Yeah. It's a striking image. Why are they on a beach? I don't understand why they're on a beach.
It doesn't even look like a particularly inviting beach. It all looks kind of a bit bleak. But they look delighted. Don't know, makes it seem a little bit more half-assed even than it is that, you know, there's only three of them turned up for the photo shoot.
For a group called,
called Four Away. Yeah. I mean, Alex Higgins was, you know, probably the biggest character that the sport's ever had. So it's kind of interesting that sort of sank without a trace.
Yeah. Well, I think we perhaps should discuss Alex Higgins' pop career. Because, I mean, like you say, I mean, he was undoubtedly a great snooker player.
Yeah.
But he had a very troubled personal life, which is essentially drinking and smoking himself to death, ultimately, over quite a long time, but not a pleasant thing to see happen, really.
No, I mean, later that year, 1986, he actually, it was kind of the beginning of the end for him. He headbutted an official at a match and he got suspended for quite a lengthy period. So that was really sort of him, like the end of his sort of career, basically, after then.
Yeah.
But sort of a very controversial character in the sport.
But that Four Away single wasn't his first attempt at a snooker-related thing. So this is a revelation to me. I mean, I would like to say to anyone listening to this, if you feel like you're going to go away and listen to all of these snooker-related records, I mean, you do so at your own risk, because... Because Alex Higgins might be very good at snooker, or might have been very good at snooker at the time, but when in 1982 he released a song called 147, backed with a song called Life in the Pocket as a single, and it is hard work.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have any sort of redeeming words to say about that. I've never heard of it before I started looking into this, and yeah, it's not great, is it? As you say, like, a genius on the table, but pretty dreadful actually. So this was sort of, again, follow up to his, he'd won the world championship, so sort of capitalizing on that sort of real moment in the spotlight. A hard listen, as you say.
What a break, what a break, what a wonderful break. I really think my lips began.
Yeah, I do wonder what their managers were thinking to put them into this situation, or whether they were manageable, or whether they had mates who were musicians who were like, why don't you make a record then, or whatever, make a bit of money. We perhaps never know, really. I mean, certainly it seems that we've got 147 in 1982, which does nothing. We've got Four Away, which is a cover of The Wanderer, which does nothing. And we have in 1992... So, bearing in mind everything you've just described about how his career tailed off somewhat, he's not just making a record with The Troggs, and obviously it's a cover of Wild Thing. He's making a record with The Troggs and Oliver Reed.
Jeez, yeah. I mean, it sounds pretty much as you might imagine. Oliver Reed and Alex Higgins collaborating on a song might sound. There's a clip of Oliver Reed's not with Alex Higgins performing it on The Word or something, it's kind of sad to watch, actually. You know, they were both sort of alcoholics, not in a good place, and I can't imagine that it was a pretty scene having the pair of them together in a recording studio. No. in the early 90s.
It's a heck of a thing, what I've managed to hear of it. I couldn't get through listening to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Not that it's very easily available, funnily enough, even on the internet these days. It's quite embarrassing as an item in itself, and sort of thinking about, like, I'm embarrassed for them a bit, and for the Troggs too.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they sort of put their name to that. But I don't know. There's a bit of a thing. I mean, like, there's certainly with Wild Thing and The Wanderer, there's that sort of, you know, sort of attempt to glamorize that lifestyle of the, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll sort of lifestyle. But it, you know, sort of at this remove, knowing how it panned out, it seems a bit kind of sad, really. Thinking of, like, the, you know, why did he do it? I think money was probably a big thing. same as the Matchroom Mob. I mean, I think when we were emailing about this, I mentioned that, you know, they had God Matchroom aftershave, which, you know, God, who, you know, like, snooker's great, but you don't really want to smell like a snooker player, you know,
like you've been in a building, some dark room in Romford for hours learning how to play. Leaning over a table.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the management had pound signs in their eyes, certainly, with their, you know, the popularity of it in the 80s.
Well, that's definitely what's led to the follow-up to Snooker Loopy called The Romford Rap.
Yes.
So what can you tell us about The Romford Rap?
So that came out in 1987. So again, Chaz and Dave with the Matchroom Mob, with the addition of Jimmy White this time. So he'd obviously...
He jumped ship.
I'm not actually sure whether he jumped ship to the Matchroom stable, or, you know, what the management... But yeah, he made an appearance on The Romford Rap. Yeah, so it's... Gosh, it's very, very, very of its time in terms of the lyrics. Again, the sort of stereotypes get ramped up a bit in this song. I think, you know, the sort of terminology that's used is certainly, you know, not words that would be used casually today.
No.
You know, it's kind of, again, it's like Snooker Loopy. It's sort of a relentless, catchy sort of song. It's not really a rap. At all. Yeah, you've got sort of snooker balls providing a bit of a sonic backdrop to this sort of song, talking about the kind of It's not really, but yeah, the multicultural world of snooker.
Yeah, they're basically going through all the colours and how to describe everything in terms of snooker in Cockney rhyming slang.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of words in this song, and it's not got that, you know, immediacy that Snooker Loopy has of the chorus, has it? It's got, because it feels like there's a lot being thrown at you by Chas and Dave with this one.
Now to start the game, upon the cane, there's 22 bugle calls. For those of you that are confused, that's 22 snooker balls. Now 15 of them are newlyweds, then you got the old rubber kite. Newlyweds, well, they're the reds, and the rubber kite's the white. It's a Romford rat. Romford rat, open up your trap and give it some.
Yeah, it's actually on the back of the single. It's got a guide to all the rhyming slang that's used during the song, so you can, if you get confused, you can sort of go through their little dictionary and find out what it means.
But after the storming success of Snooker Loopy, you would imagine that they couldn't possibly go wrong with this one. But it reaches a grand height of number 91 in the charts.
Oh dear.
So that's a heck of a drop off from number 6 for the one before.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as you say, it certainly doesn't have the immediacy of Snooker Loopy. I think, yeah, that sort of captured a moment, and I think, yeah, it's a classic, you know, difficult follow up. Doesn't quite capture the spirit in the same way.
Even though it has a really high concept pop video to go with it as well. And this, you know, out of its time again, all these girls dressed up as the Red Balls on this giant snooker table, and then all the matchroom mob and others basically playing the roles of the colours and being dunked into pockets by the Red Ball girls and things like that. It's very strange.
It is very strange, yeah. And you've got them sort of bumping bum cheeks to the sound of their snooker balls being potted. It's, yeah, again, very of its time. But, yeah, I mean, they'd obviously sort of, you know, ramped up the concept of it from Snooker Loopy. I'm very fond of the video for that, you know, because you've got all these guys there sort of, you know, no one's bothered to sort of dress up or anything. It's a bit like, you know, they're doing that whole Band-Aid thing of, like, with the earphones on and the hand to the earphone singing along. So it's very sort of low budget. Put a bit of thought into the concept of Romford Rat, but it's an unusual watch.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, what's even weirder, though, is that the B-side of that single appears to be the Crackerjack theme song that Chas and Dave did. You've got this quite... I mean, adult-oriented isn't quite the right way to describe it, but it's like, it's for grown-ups, the Romford rap and the video and stuff, and then the Crackerjack, which is for kids.
Yeah, 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 it's a strange pairing. Gosh, I wonder if, like, anyone really listened to the lyrics of it. One of the, just a sort of catchy song, but yeah, it's a slightly odd pairing. Definitely. Yeah.
And that basically marks the end of the Matchroom Mob's recording career.
Yeah, yeah.
Two and out.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. But, you know, love a bit of Chas and Dave, and, you know, it was a it was a moment, and it sort of marked, you know, as I say, snooker's moment in the sun, really, during the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very symbolic of that, definitely. I suppose before we start to wrap up, we should mention that if people want to go looking, like I mentioned before, there are loads of snooker players doing bits of music, and I won't go through all of them, but I wanted to mention a couple that you might be able to add some information to. Jimmy White, who's a name we've mentioned before, in 2003, which seems mad, releasing a single called Minted.
Yeah, again, this is quite a difficult listen, this one. Minted, yeah, not the best. He's good friends with Ronnie Wood, apparently, and apparently Ronnie Wood gave it a seal of approval, which just, you know, I'm kind of quite appalled by that. But yeah, apparently it's something he'd been wanting to do for a while. I think there's a few snooker players who are frustrated musicians, so I think he quite likes the rock and roll side of it, does Jimmy White.
Yeah, I read somewhere that on the promotional copies of this single, the song was actually credited to Ron Wood, as in Ronnie Wood of the Stones. So he may have actually written the song for him.
Oh, gosh, really? Okay.
But it sounds like some sort of weird, slightly dance-influenced Britpop stuff from about 10 years previously. So it's a very odd thing.
It is a very odd thing. I think it was a sort of serious thing. You know, it's not a novelty record.
No, not at all.
No, and, you know, it's got that kind of look, you know, that, you know, the sort of Oasis-style font on the front cover and everything.
Well, we should also mention then something that's a bit different to it. A mid-90s single by Peter Ebdon called I Am a Clown.
Yeah. Again, oh gosh, I mean, this is sort of, you know, deadly serious. He made a sort of attempt to have a music career in the mid-90s. So it's very sort of, you know, a sort of straight-faced attempt at being a serious musician. I hate to be sort of negative. Well, I don't with Peter Ebdon, actually, because he's a crazy sort of internet conspiracy theorist now. So,
oh, God, he's not,
he is, yeah. His Twitter feed's, very, very David Icke. So,
oh, dear me.
Yeah, so, we'll sort of rightly consign that to the dustbin of history, his music career.
Which is strange because he's probably actually technically the better singer out of all of the ones we've discussed as well. But you don't get to get away with all that other stuff anyway, on the back of a David Cassidy cover from 1996.
Absolutely.
So what I did want to ask you is, have you ever played snooker yourself?
I've had a go. I'm terrible at it. You know, I've had a knock around, but it's actually a really difficult sport to play. They make it look so easy on the TV. You know, the ball's float into the pockets. But I have had a knock around, but I'm not very good. But
the first time I ever saw a full-size snooker table, having only ever played like on a kid's snooker table or pool, it was like, this thing's the size of a swimming pool. How can anyone do anything with this? It's ludicrous.
I know, gosh. And, you know, the pockets are so small. It's a very different, you know, I've sort of been used to having a knock around on a pool table and stuff, but a proper snooker table, you know, the pockets are tiny. That it's, as you say, it's a vast table. So, sadly not.
Stick to bar billiards. That's more amusing. Just before we finish off, I'll give a very special mention, though, to Mitchell and Webb, who had a series of characters in their TV series who were the snooker commentators. I don't know if you ever saw the Mitchell and Webb stuff on telly.
Yeah.
and they do this parody of the snooker commentators, but they do a song themselves in one of the shows, and I believe they did it on their stage show as well, where they take the song Lady in Red, Chris de Burr's classic.
Yeah.
And turn it into Table of Reds.
Oh, God, that sounds delightful. I will be looking that up straight away.
So, yeah, the notion of snooker novelty songs has worked its way meta-style into a comedy sketch where they've reworked a song into a snooker-based thing, which is even more complicated than any of the ones we've discussed.
Fantastic. Thank you for the tip-off. I'll be looking that up.
And I shall put a little extract in here to play for everyone. Okay, well, with that, we can put away the cues, tidy up all the balls, make sure the bays is nice and clean. And I will say, Denise, thank you very much for bringing along Snooker Loopy.
Oh, thank you, Paul. It's been fun.
Cheers.
Never seen you looking so oblong as you did tonight. I've never seen your angle so right. You were a table.